podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so we return after yet another double game week ends out. There have been so many, a slew of double game weeks that, yeah, I'm getting double game week fatigue. I never thought I'd say that. I think I said this last pod as well. That is how fatigued I am of double game weeks. Yeah, so many. Anyway, all three of us back for a yearly favourite this week, particularly your favourite, Nick. You all right?
Hey, yeah, I'm all right, thank you. I was going to say it's the worst wild card ever, but managed to get bailed out by the Leeds guys massively tonight. Yeah, and we're also doing our annual risk profiling, so focusing on the positives, very excited about that. Of course, we are Who Got the Assist. Make sure to give us a follow on Twitter if you haven't already, at WGTA underscore FPL for Tom, it's our main account, at WGTA underscore Nick for myself, and at FPL Stag for Ampley. And also join our mini league if you haven't already, the code is CPSUOF. So yep, we're joined by Anthony, FPL Stag. How are you today?
Evening, lads. Good to be back again. Yeah, the risk profile part, it was definitely one of the really enjoyable ones and one that a lot of people got into last year. So it's nice to be able to bring it back again. This is the third year, I think, of the risk profiles pod, or certainly the third year where we've been able to involve the Twitter polls going through it. So I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. So the main section of this pod is going to be looking at those risk profiles that we've identified and your responses to that particular Twitter poll that Tom put out. We'll also have our usual standard listeners' questions, which are obviously focusing on the upcoming double game week, and the correspondence section is indeed here for this episode too. First of all, though, we're going to have the game week reviews and the market forces.
Got the lowest of 71 in my wild card. I'm counting it as a qualified success just because I got 48 on my last wild card. It is a small, I think it's like a grey arrow, basically. It's just, I think I might have dropped 2k or something like that. It's a bit annoying, but I mean, I went Bamford captain, Rafinha, you know, usual stuff basically happened in terms of the outcome this week. And that the one thing I didn't want to happen did, which was Dallas scoring. And that was the only player I was really exposed to. And guess what? He went ahead and scored. Brilliant. It's happened for weeks on end now. You know, James Justin, the likes of him scoring or hauling, the likes of Somlin and him hauling. It's felt a bit cruel recently, but there we go. I mean, I was on a high on the Saturday after the likes of, you know, Ola Aina, who came on my wild card, who got an 8 points. That was nice. The double kit City clean sheet in Cancelo and Diaz, obviously. Oh, if Cancelo had scored that, that would have been amazing. But yeah, Bamford only getting eight, and everyone captained him, so it doesn't matter, really, does it? But Dallas was the only one that I decided on my wild card. Yeah, I'm not going to go with him because I'll need to take like a -4 or a -8 to remove him, Rafinha and Bamford to get double game weekers in. And that one decision has cost me a lot of points. But I'm going to start off next week anyway. I think I've got 14. I'll have 14 double game weekers once I've done my moves, shall I spend later on. Nick, I think you're next up.
I only outscored you by a point in the end, but which I'm surprised about. To be honest, like, it was a bit of a complete utter disaster. I was on 45 points prior to tonight's game. I was looking at another massive red arrow, dropping another 50k in overall rank, just completely falling by the wayside. Prior to tonight, my only player that had actually got me any points was Bruno Fernandes. And his points didn't actually help my team because of his effective ownership. It actually damaged my rank. So literally every single player has blanked. And, you know, like, so Rudiger, Shaw, all blanking, Salah, Son, Watkins, Kane, McCarthy in goal. It was a complete and utter shambles. Rafinha managed to pick up two bonus, but yeah, he really deserves an assist or a goal of some form against Wolves. It's just really unlucky, but nice to at least get something from him. And then tonight's game was just really, really good, to be honest. Like, got me back into FPL after a little bit of a really rough patch. So all three of my players scored, which is lovely to see. Dallas in defence, Rafinha in midfield, and the captain, Bamford, returning as well. So 27 points from tonight's games. McCarthy even managed to get a save point somehow. Don't know what he's doing there, but he outscored Martinez at least. So that decision in goal was justified, that risky decision ultimately. But yeah, 72 points. It is a red arrow. I've dropped to my lowest rank since game week 8. But, you know, move on to the double game week, as Tom said.
Things have turned around a little bit in the past few weeks. I started with a trough, had a bit of a peak, troughed a little in the last, maybe in 5 weeks, and then the last two have kind of pulled me up nicely again. So this week, actually, I had 95 gross, 91 when you took my hit into account. So I had transferred out Suchek and DCL, and in a bid to cover the double game week, I had brought in Bamford and Rafinha, captained Bamford, which obviously went quite well. But I had the same trio that you did, who all scored tonight, being Dallas, Rafinha and Bamford. Vardy I had up top with an assist. Fernandez, who of course hurt me with his 12-pointer, but still within my side. Salah, Gundogan, then the two clean sheets from Diaz and Cancelo. Pity he didn't score it. And then I actually played Johnston as my goalkeeper ahead of Emi Martinez, which was a 5-point profit. And I think actually ultimately one of the most important players in my whole side was actually having James Tarkowski's 9 points, which were definitely kind of a differential set of points in the midst of a game week where a lot of players had the same sides. So it helped me to gain about 32% in my rank this week, which is quite nice, up to my highest point so far this season, about 136k. So a five-figure rank is at least looking within my grasp. I'm 83 points off the top 10k, live FPL tells me, and with all my chips intact, I feel like that is still kind of the stated aim and I might as well chase it, but I will definitely feel quite exposed for this coming double game week, given that I won't have even 11 double game weekers, I don't think, and I certainly won't be bench boosting. So hopefully that doesn't lead to a slide, because I've kind of enjoyed the bit of forward momentum in the last few weeks.
So you're going to be using the last four chips in the last four game weeks, aren't you? You're wildcarding in game week 35, bench boosting in 36, triple caps in 37, free hitting in game week 38. You're going to be like, nope, no, I'm not doing anything, nope. But you're going to be holding out for a greatly beautiful tomorrow the whole season.
No, like, oh, no,
crap, nothing's happened. I'm screwed.
I'm definitely going to free hit for the blank. But okay, the rest excellent. Of them, Tom, excellent. I don't know.
you're going to fill your team with the likes of Aubameyang, the likes of the Brighton triple up is going to be there for you. Wow, what a useful free hit.
Yeah, it's just such a pity we don't get expected FPL points, because my God, those Brighton players would be great.
Right, market forces, Nick. How is everyone responding to that mini double game week, as it were, ahead of the big double to come?
Yeah, so everyone's preparing for the double game week, and actually it's Harvey Barnes that has caught the market's attention mostly, with 342,000 transfers in for him right now, which is quite a large number. But it's just because of his last couple of performances, which have been excellent. Picked up a goal and an assist against Aston Villa. And the previous week, of course, he picked up a goal and an assist against Liverpool. So a couple of really good performances from Harvey. He's relatively cheap still as well, at 6.9 million. And of course, Leicester have a double game week ahead of themselves. One game at home against Arsenal. And also an away fixture against Burnley. So a couple of nice fixtures there for Harvey, definitely attracting the market's attention. One that I'm a little bit worried about not owning myself now. Otherwise, it's Calvert-Lewin, also getting a lot of transfers in. He's the second most transferred in player, of 230,000 transfers in for him. Of course, he didn't actually start against Liverpool. He's been injured, but came off the bench for a cameo, 28 minutes, and picked up an assist. And now looking real like a really good option, actually, for the double game week, because Everton have a couple of really tasty fixtures, Southampton at home and West Brom away. So you can understand why so many people bringing him in. Otherwise, a few usual suspects that we've been talking about in the last few weeks. Kane, obviously they've got quite a good double game week, Spurs with Burnley and Fulham, looking at potential captaincy option, and Watkins as well. Another one who blanked this week, unfortunately for me, but he came in on my wild card. And another one who also has a game in 29, which I think a lot of managers are looking towards, as well as the double game week. So that's why a lot of attention for Spurs and Aston Villa. But otherwise, the only other person heavily bought in, I guess, right now is Ilkay Gundogan. He also had a little bit of an injury as well, so a few people might have sold him, but he's back and played the 90 minutes against Arsenal, though he didn't return.
Yeah, and then I guess looking at the transfers out, you're seeing Jack Grealish by far leading the way there. Obviously, a lot of those transfers going to Harvey Barnes. He's about 346,000 transfers out at this moment in time. He's followed up basically by a double game week forward exodus, with both Bamford and Danny Ings being heavily sold, with the injured James Justin actually the fourth most sold player, which is obviously a response to his injury a few game weeks ago. People still getting around to getting him out of their sides.
Yeah, Ings had a bit of a disaster with a double game week, didn't he? And he's being heavily sold. Looks like all the single game week forwards, Bamford, Ings, and also Antonio, all being sold and people getting in, the likes of Calvert-Lewin, the likes of Kane, the likes of Watkins. So lots of people attacking the doubles there.
Yep, unsurprising. With this next double game week coming up, double game week 26, the biggest double game week I think we've ever had, according to Ben Crellin. Talk about that in the questions later on. The first thing, though, this week is the main topic, which is risk profiles. To start off, there's a certain number of core decisions we make per year. Every year, we have 37 free transfers. We choose 15 starting players. We choose two wildcards, 30 decisions in that. We choose 15 players and a free hit. We choose to, if we do want to do it, use triple captain once, bench boost once. We choose 38 captains. We choose 38 vices. We choose one free hit, I guess. And we have 38 times four bench choices, which leads us to 327 core decisions per year. That's a meandering way of saying that we're talking about hits today, because the hits are voluntary actions we take on top of those sort of core decisions that we make. Before you say, sometimes there are things which compare you to take a hit, so removing injured players, so it's not voluntary. They still constitute a choice. So you can, of course, let's do nothing if a player's injured. This pod isn't about doing nothing, really. It's about looking at those hits, no matter whether they're elective, so you've chosen to do it despite no injuries, or enforced, as for the prior example, having played injured, and using them as a barometer for your risk profile. What sort of risk appetite do you have as manager, and what can you learn from all that? We've also, as Anthony mentioned earlier, have 3 years' worth of poll data to examine, along with lots of anecdotes from Twitter. So, risk profiles. Nick, what are these?
Just have to say, I enjoyed your FPL version of train spotting just there with all the choosing and choices that you have to make.
I'm glad you got the reference.
But yeah, risk profiles. So I guess this is, as we said, this is something we covered annually. So few people perhaps have heard the speech before. So apologies to some of our hardcore listeners if this is something you've heard before. But to essentially surmise, risk profiling is something that brokers will do when they've got an investor who's looking for advice or what stocks and shares to buy. Very common in financial services. Now, a lot of people perhaps these days don't use brokers, but they might use robo-advice platforms, firms like Nutmeg that are growing increasingly in popularity, which kind of just give you electronic advice based on a questionnaire which you would ask. So, essentially be asked a series of questions about yourself, about your personality a little bit, and just about your sort of financial choices. And on that basis, the company will essentially determine a risk profile and give you suggestions on what stocks to buy. So someone who's perhaps deemed to be a particularly cautious investor, wanting to sort of avoid risk or dangerous scenarios, wants to be very careful with their money and make sure it's safe, it would perhaps be recommended to invest in a sort of a safer fund, such as cash ISA. Alternatively, if you're kind of like a risk taker, you kind of got a bit more of a aggressive personality in terms of your money, you want to kind of shoot towards the moon, as they say, you might be recommended like something a bit more volatile, sort of a high risk, high reward, like cryptocurrency, like Bitcoin or even Dogecoin or something like that. Or if you're an idiot like me, you might end up putting your money in a gambling stroke stock market like the football index, just to kind of take some gambles with your money and see what happens and hope to make a little bit of cash. But obviously, the risk is that you might lose it all. So we've kind of been applying that to FPL over the past few years, I guess, to just determine what type of risk taker you are. And we've come up with four specific categories, which we've also polled online as well.
Yeah, so those four categories are thus, you have your cautious risk takers. So those are people who've taken between in FPL 0 to 4 hits. So that's costing them between 0 and 16 points. Then you've got your moderate risk takers who've taken between 5 and 8 hits at this point in the season, costing them between 20 and 32 points. Then you've got your more aggressive risk takers who've taken 9 to 14 hits. So that's 36 to 56 points bench. That's pretty substantial. And then you've got your extreme risk takers who've taken over 15 hits so far this season. So they've spent over 60 points on hits so far this term. So this season, we are obviously polling as we enter game week 26. In previous seasons, we've been polling entering game week 23. Obviously, the calendar year and everything is slightly changed given that this season started late. But anyhow, this data still is quite interesting. We've got 3,000-ish people who've responded, and thanks so much to everyone who got in touch to it. So between 0 and 4 hits are cautious people. We are cautious risk takers. We have only 29.8% of respondents say that they've taken less than 16 points worth of hits. Between 5 and 8 hits are more moderate risk takers. We've those, there's 32.7% of those who responded. Those who fall into the more aggressive category, 9 to 14 hits, 24% of respondents, so about a quarter. And over 15 hits, so 60 points burnt, 13.5% of people. So I guess more broadly, this means that just over 60% of people, I would say, are risk averse. They fall into our cautious or moderate categories. And 37.5% are more into their risk, with 13.5% obviously in that extreme category. Obviously, what makes maybe this season different to other seasons is that we have had a big blank game week. We've had quite a few doubles, and there's been a little more time as well, given that we're polling entering 26 instead of entering 23, as per other seasons. However, it is still quite instructive to compare to previous seasons. So, for example, last season, 2019-20, so this was something taken, a poll taken in about January 2020, pre-pandemic, 75% of people fell into the cautious and moderate category. Whereas the previous season, previous January, entering Game Week 23 as well, it was 74%-ish fell into the cautious or moderate category. I think, though, what's more instructive is that the majority in both of those seasons actually fell into the 0 to 4 hits. So last season, it was about 60%, and the season before that, it was about 42%. Whilst, of course, say, it's only 30% of people have fallen into the category this year. So what we're seeing is generally a shift towards more risk-taking this season, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the first year, as you said, that 5 to 8 hits or 20 to 32 points burnt category has come out on top. Almost a third of respondents said that. We've got, yeah, about 3,000 people each time have gotten back to us. So there's a substantial sort of barometer of how the FPL community kind of gets on and perceives the thing. As Anthony has said, there's been a real shift towards being more accepting of hits, I think, this year. Whereas before, we tend to see a bit of kind of small C conservatism around kind of points, especially last year when things were normal, as it were. This year, because of the craziness of everything, it appears that people are kind of more likely to think, oh, well, you know, screw it. Why not? Effectively. And I think that was definitely something that came out in the category, especially when we asked people to kind of write in and tell us, you know, if there's any thinking behind the approach in terms of the number of hits they've taken. Starting off with the cautious risk taker, I mean, these people have, you know, historically been the bulk of people responding and writing in to us, as Anthony mentioned. This year, 30% near enough. Last year, 59%. The year before that, 43%. So, you know, this has almost halved, in fact, the number of people who have said that they've been very conservative this year. Few people who responded saying they were this and wrote into us. Andy Rayner, he said you need 6 points to break even if you're swapping out an expected 2-pointer. He calls that high risk. So he says he only takes injuries when they force his hand. He's taken 3 hits so far. Paul Skyplayer in FBL says he's just taken 4 hits. 3 of them have come in double game weeks to help him with chip usage. And he's now in the top 1,000. And amazingly, FPL Biscuits said he's taken no hits so far because he finds them so hard to justify. He's been tempted a few times, but he's only taking his first, for example, this week for the big double. He's at the moment 57k with all chips to play. And finally, FPL Dabby said he set up a strategy to make as few hits as possible this season, has only taken 3, and he says it's largely worked. And he always asks himself, you know, can it wait a week? 9 out of 10 times, he has waited a week and things have kind of, you know, changed for him. So he didn't want the player so much. He was thinking of getting in or another option has presented itself. I think that historically, this has been the one that, you know, we've seen most people respond back to say, you know, I'm quite cautious with hits. I mean, is this something that aligns with your sort of more cautious approach that we've espoused in the past?
Yeah, I haven't actually fallen into this category this year. I have fallen into the moderate risk taker, but certainly we see a lot of managers actually who do fall into this category. I remember seeing it quite a lot last year, and also, you know, the likes of Paul, who you mentioned, has got an excellent overall rank, you know, not taking very, you know, taking very few hits, and often it's because, you know, they might have picked that solid team right at the start of the season and just not had to make those changes. You know, they've been quite lucky perhaps to a certain extent with injuries and things like that, but you know, these types of managers, I guess, you know, they own Bruno Fernandes, sell him, they might own the likes of Mo Salah or Patrick Bamford, who's probably been there since week one. There's just no necessity perhaps to sell these guys. These types of managers just play it quite safe, as we said, small c conservative, quite cautious risk takers, no need to make a move you know, if you don't have to avoid those minus fours, because with the minus four, you're always kind of chasing. And if you've got the right players in the right place at the right time, then it's brilliant.
The thing that most of us FPL commentators, whatever you want to say, ascribe us to be, would recommend avoiding hits if at all possible. And yet this season has definitely been a season where I think, like the community, I think even the most risk-averse of FPL managers could find themselves not falling into this cautious risk-taker category. And that does make sense to me. And I commend those who've managed to hold themselves together to not do it so far. Like, there's as we were talking about when we were going through the percentages, like the fact that we have about half as many people falling into this category as in previous seasons, I think shows how different this season has been in its structure, though. With the big blank game week that we've already had, I think that could have accounted for, you know, minus fours and minus eights and an awful lot of teams by itself. The doubles that you would have just felt maybe you needed to get that third Leeds player in quick and you brought them in, or you might have taken a risk on Ings. We've had City double game weeks as well that people felt they had to respond to. So it was so easy to not fall into this category. So it's testament to very kind of prudent management and proactive management that people managed to not fall into that category if they were in there. But of course, it was a smaller number than we're used to seeing.
Yeah, I mean, this is, as Nick kind of intimated, the long-term investor sort of perspective, people in this category, people who are incredibly cautious, people who are kind of carefully managing their way out of situations, you know, sometimes perhaps fielding 10 men rather than taking a minus four, the sort of person who's happy to have two or three injured players and a couple of suboptimal players because at the end of the day, they think that, those players potentially getting one or two, potentially getting, you know, a lucky assist, something like that, is better than taking a minus four. I salute people like this. I wish I was like that, but I just can't do it. Basically, I feel like every year we do this, I'm just like, oh, I really wish I was in this category, but I'm not. I'm really not. Let's move on to the moderate risk takers then. So these are people who are a tiny bit more risky than our ultra conservative individuals. Again, small C, don't offend anybody. And these people are people who have made 5 to 8 hits so far. So they've burnt 20's first 2 points. A few anecdotes, I suppose, from social media here. So General Zod, he said he's taken 7 so far. He's taken a little more than normal, and he's taken that to get ahead of the curve. He said he's got quite a healthy rank, but the effect has plateaued rather than actually giving him the boost. James Keatley, he said he's taken 6. He said it seems this season more than ever is one to do it. FPL Luck says he's taken 7 hits. He says generally he takes very few hits during the course of the season because they can bite you on the arse, like swapping premium players over. And finally, at Permacap, Moon says he's taken 9 hits and he's just been a bit forced by the many doubles and the chaotic nature of the season. But he's doing all right. He's at 80k. Now, I think what's really interesting reading through the category of people who said that they were in this section, for example, where our friend Jeff Pedder is also in here, they all kind of said, well, normally I don't take that many. But this season specifically has been the one which has made them think, yeah, you know, I've got to get ahead of the curve. I've got to do something in order to just navigate the situation better. And in contrast to the ultra cautious, I guess, they've been more likely to, in a qualified way, throw caution to the wind, haven't they?
So I've fallen into this category myself. I've actually at the higher end of this category. So I've taken 32 points worth of hits. I've only just in it this year. I've also taken a minus 8, and I just had a quick look to see what the context of that minus 8 was. And it was to get in Manchester City players for a double game week. And of course, this was brought on by COVID-19 cancellations and all of that carnage that we've kind of had this season, which makes this season very, very different to previous ones. So that particular week, I did get in De Bruyne and I did get in Ruben Dias for a double game week. And Dias in particular did excellently. I think he got an 18 pointer that particular week. So, you know, there is large upside sometimes in terms of taking risks. My season actually, as I said, has been derailed a little bit, but I haven't actually taken any hits in the last 4 game weeks, obviously wildcarded this week. But other than that, it just shows the benefit of the hit. And, you know, it's not always about sticking with the cards you're dealt. If there are problems, you know, there are great reasons to take those hits. And I think, you know, managers, perhaps, you know, in contrast to the cautious and small C conservative risk takers, the moderate risk takers are willing to take a few chances compared to the cautious players who perhaps will, you know, stick with a player who's not performing for a few game weeks, you know, the likes of Mo Salah. They probably view this kind of guy as a season keeper, perhaps, whilst with the moderate risk takers, you know, they're a little bit more willing to rotate a little bit in that category. And I've kind of fallen into that category a little bit this season, not always to my benefit, but it's just interesting to note the change in my sort of risk profile this season.
Yeah, so I find myself similarly in this category, actually, although unlike Nick, I'm actually at the lower end of it and I wouldn't have qualified for it if we did this a week earlier. I've taken exactly 5 hits, 20 points spent, and I've done that all with minus fours. One of those was in game week 3, and that was bringing in City players. Remember, they blanked early on in the season. Whereas after that, all of my hits were basically responding to blanks and doubles. So blank game week 18, I took one hit there to bring in a Diaz and Saka. I gained 10 points there. For the double in 19, I brought in Watkins and Salah. I gained 12 from the transfers out that particular time. Although you could argue that by bringing in Salah at that point, who didn't score really in that week, it was actually Watkins who did well. But Salah has been a long-term cost to my team, really. Double game week 24, I brought in Tarkovsky and Vardy. I gained 14 points on those that I'd sold out. And game week 25, I brought in, just for this week, obviously, it was Bamford and Rafinha who came in for the double with a gain of 15. So like every time I've done it for a blank or double, it's basically been to get players in for injured players or players who really weren't featuring. So the gains are almost a little bit of a misnomer in that regard, that I wasn't, they weren't the riskiest of transfers in the overall scheme of things. But I think that just shows you how the risk baseline has actually come up, that someone like me has ended up taking 5 hits, even though on what I felt were just all almost dead certs, bringing in these players every single time. And I still find myself in the moderate category as opposed to the cautious category, when I would have probably considered myself in the cautious category so far this particular season. I think that just shows you why we've seen that trend towards risk overall this year.
Yep, more problems equal more hits, basically. I'm sure there's a rap sort of link I could have made there, but I didn't do that. I know what you mean. I think it's certainly the case. I think the vast body of the engaged manager community is going to be in this one, a case where you're using hits to a reasonable extent, making kind of obvious changes, but using kind of extra hits to get ahead and gain advantage.
But what is quite interesting is that we've last season, for example, we would have seen 26.2% of managers falling into this category. And the season before that, it was 31.7% of managers. So only a little bit less, but actually at an earlier time in the season, 3 game weeks earlier in the season. Whereas this year, obviously, as you said, it was 32.7%. So what you're actually seeing is that, okay, maybe in previous seasons, we found that quite a lot of people fell into this category as well. Whereas those that maybe were in this category in previous seasons, which was a substantial fraction, have now actually migrated further on, Tom, haven't they, towards the aggressive?
Yeah, indeed. So the aggressive 9-14 hits, which is shock horror is where I sit, has actually exploded by more almost 3 times. So this year, 24%, as Anthony mentioned earlier, said that they'd taken between 9 and 14 hits. So they'd burnt between 36 and 56 points this season. Last season, that was 8.7%. So yeah, that's almost 3 times as many people have said they're in this category. Year before that, it was 16%. So it does veer around a little bit. You know, there are a few people who wrote in here, which was quite interesting to hear from other people who also fit this category. Bench Boost FPL. So he's taken 11 hits this season so far. He said he doesn't tend to take many. He tends to be more risk averse. Well, mate, you're in the aggressive risk taker category. So maybe an example of somebody who doesn't realise that as risky as they are. Kitan Chopra says he doesn't normally take hits because he's stubborn, but he's taken 9 so far, so he is here. Alan as well, FPL Diagnosis, said he targeted the game week 16 wildcard from the start, so he took a few hits in the beginning to kind of get himself there, which kind of makes sense. I think that maybe that's a factor as well in why people have taken more hits, and there's that higher hit baseline, as we've said, because there are specific strategies did lend themselves to taking more hits. And finally, Deepak says he's taken 40 points worth of hits the season so far. He's planning on the minus 8 for the double game, which takes him to 48, but he's currently at 30k OR. So yeah, I guess it does work. Never let anyone tell you, as Andy FPL said, that there's more than one way to play the game. This is where I sit. I looked at my hits earlier on, and guess what? I actually gained from the hits I'd done this year. Hooray, amazing. Yeah, my PL was plus 24 points, but that includes captain and triple captain points. So, yeah, I'm fudging it slightly. But Anthony's shaking his head. Those were realised points. I got those points on the board. Therefore, they make sense.
They're like so the Bruno Fernandes points, are they?
They hurt you. Yeah, I've shit-housed my way into that positive. But basically, I thought they were worth counting. It, obviously, if I didn't count them, it's negative. Let me have this one, guys. Seriously, it's been a really hard day for me. But this is equal to 13 hits in total that I've taken, 52 points burned. I've made 33 transfers in total. So 39% of my transfers this year have been hits. I've sold 139 points worth. That includes hits and players whose points I've sold, and bought in 163 points. And overall, I've gained 203 points from transfers I've made. So that's a good thing. I've taken hits on 10 separate occasions. I've gained on 5. I've lost on 5. I've sold 2 double-digit scorers in Vardy versus Brighton and Kevin De Bruyne versus Chelsea. And I've brought in 3 amazing double-digit players, not counting captains this time. The likes of Rob Holding, game week 10, got a shithouse assist. He passed it sideways to Kieran Tierney. That's one double digit I got. Gundogan, okay, yeah, I'll take that. That was the first time I got. And Matt Loughton, yeah, I looked at him. I just thought, yeah, this guy is going to get me bare points. 17 points in double game 24. Yeah, so I've gotten very lucky this year in terms of that being a positive P&L. It never normally is. Every year I look at this and think, oh, I could probably do better and probably be more conservative. Maybe I'm just too left wing.
I definitely think there's been a little bit of fudging of the numbers there in terms of adding the captains. I'll let you have this one today. Obviously, yeah, it's quite interesting to see hear the tidbits from all the guys who kind of fall into this sort of strategy, and a few new entries by the sounds of things as well, perhaps brought on again by this season and trying to adjust to the new doubles and blanks that have happened that we don't normally get sort of in the early stages of the season. But yeah, I think that these all risk takers, they're not afraid of a -8. That's something scary. I mean, I always try and avoid a -8. It's like the one thing I try and avoid all season if I can. Unfortunately, it's double that I did one this season. But, you know, with the sort of aggressive risk takers, they will aggressively target form, the fixtures. You know, they're willing to gamble, I guess, on a few sort of more differential picks. You know, the likes of, you know, Sterling maybe, or Mane, or even Timo Werner, Marcus Rashford might come into the sides if they're looking sharp. Doesn't matter if they're not in the template, you know, these guys, you know, looking for those differentials, taking those risks, but of course a blank, and they could easily be straight out of the sides.
So it is quite interesting looking at those aggressive risk takers. And I see that we have highlighted that people maybe find themselves in this category who may not have otherwise found themselves there. But we wanted to obviously keep that consistent with prior years to give us a more reflective sample that we could then do a little bit of analysis of ourselves. So there is going to be a slight tendency towards risk in the numbers through that. But at the same time, I think the actual growth in the number of aggressive risk takers, like we're talking about double on last season and quite a substantial increase as well on the season before that, is definitely material. And I don't think that's just to do with the time that we've taken this. And I think what we'll actually find with the extreme risk takers is a fairly similar pattern emerging as well, in that we have 13.5% of our respondents to this poll fell into that extreme category, who have taken more than 15 hits. And that's an awful lot more than previous seasons, as I said, as well. That's about double last season, which was 6, and a good bit more than the season before that as well, which was 10%.
No, I mean, we actually got quite a few managers who said, it's my first season for this one, more than I can remember getting in previous years. For example, FPL Egan. How do you say it, Anthony?
Is this like John
Egan? Egan. FPL, yeah. Egan. Ryan. God, another one. I'm glad he didn't say his name was FPL Matt D. Said he's taken 15 hits. And he said that's mostly down to inexperience from it being his first proper season. However, he said most have paid off. And he's at 250K, which he's happy with. He says, I like to be super aggressive. Ed FPL at FFFS Ed said, I voted. I've taken so many hits, I lost count. I asked him, why? Why did you do that? Is it Hail Marys? Is it something like that? He said, a lot of the moves I've made are beyond reason. Fair enough. And our friend FPR Raccoon Rishi says he's taken 17 hits this year, but he said most were early season. So similar to what I said before about people kind of moving towards that game week 16 wildcard, he said he was trying to clean up a mess, basically. He says he's taken 7 hits since game week 12 and he's gone from 3 million to 280K. So yeah, an upward trajectory of the old trash panda there. So yeah, very, very good. So I guess these sort of, like, in contrast to the rest of the group, these sorts of people are those who are going to be high rollers at a casino, who are going to have as many wins as are going to have losses. They're not going to be interested in sort of safe investments, as Nick would put it. They'd be there, you know, betting on contracts with difference, spread betting, doing all this sort of crazy stuff. Extreme risk takers, Nick, can you ever understand them? Do you just think they're just mad individuals?
I wouldn't describe them as mad individuals. I think that, you know, these kind of guys perhaps stay by GME at $250. I don't know, but I think certainly, you know, they don't really care too much. You know, they're willing to just take a hit week in, week out. It's more about the gross points rather than the net points to a certain extent, trying to stay ahead of the curve. And sometimes it can work out, as you said, from Rishi's perspective. He's really gained rank in recent weeks. So there's certainly some rhyme and reason sometimes to taking hits week in, week out. And when you're kind of in this sort of scenario, you can really experiment with some interesting characters as well. You could bring in the likes of Bamiyang, you know, throw him into the table. And then if he doesn't do anything, which has kind of been his season to a certain extent, he can go straight out the next week and test it on another player like Sterling. So you kind of, I can see a lot of reward, a lot of upside to sort of chasing some differentials to a certain extent. If it pays off, then it can be excellent for you. But we have seen, you know, we haven't got too many examples of people who've taken this many hits that have a sort of a top 100k rank. So there is a certain detriment to this kind of extreme strategy, so to speak.
Yeah, I feel like there's maybe like extremes and there's extremes. You know, there's chasing like a game week rank every single week, and then there's taking an awful lot of hits to try and chase an overall rank. And those are two very different types of extreme risk taker. And it'd be kind of interesting to almost see a breakdown of those within the numbers that we even have here. But, you know, but by and large, that, like, as you say, guys, like these are people who are really, really chasing like severe upsides with their transfers. And you know, it can work out, as you say, and it can go, you know, horrifically badly just because of the sheer volume of points that are being deducted from your score before you even start.
Exactly. No, I guess one good point, and I want to make it, but I tried to make it like unpatronizingly as possible. Someone, Claret FPL of Bonus Pints Pod, said that he, you know, he takes a hit every week, just have fun with it. And sometimes that is something which is undervalued in what we do and what we say. Because obviously, you know, we do take our analysis seriously and we talk through it very seriously, hopefully with a bit more jocularity than we did in the beginning, thanks to the Irish infusion, perhaps. But I think, you know, that is sometimes undervalued as a reason to take hits. You know, to bring in like sort of Bamiyang has been mentioned, or I'm not sure about Buffon, but there you go. But bring in sort of, you know, that player every week just to give you a bit of sparkle about your game, rather than sitting there and just kind of thinking, oh, you know, this one is a week, so I'm just expecting a grey arrow or a red arrow, so I'm trying to tread water and hopefully get through it. And maybe that should be something that should be said about these guys, that maybe they're just having fun. And maybe that is why we had a notable amount of first-time managers who are in this group, because you are having fun. And that's a great thing when you get old and bedraggled like we are. And perhaps things may have changed a little bit.
Old, bedraggled, and doubled up on City's defence.
Exactly. Tripled up on Fulham, perhaps, double game week. Oh, how far things have fallen for us. So, have we learnt anything from talking about the typologies? Like, you think about where you sit in all of these, just to go through them again. If you are a cautious risk taker, 0 to 4 hits, 0 to 16 points burn. If you are a moderate risk taker, like these guys, 5 to 8 hits taken, 20 to 32 points burn. If you are, like me, an aggressive risk taker, 9 to 14 hits taken, 36 to 56 points burn. Or above that, a fire starter, effectively, 15 plus hits taken, 60 plus points burnt. Have we learned anything about talking about these typologies? Do you reckon it helps managers to kind of gauge their own behavior and help them kind of think further about how they can improve, or maybe whether it kind of tells them something about their own personalities, Anthony?
I think the most interesting thing looking at this typology is comparing it to other seasons, how we see that for sure managers' approach to taking hits is very much responsive to the season that we've seen, and compare, like, when we look at the fact that we've had so many blanks, so many doubles, there's all the COVID things that have gone on, these like sudden injuries that have just wiped out squads and caused all sorts of headaches for FPL managers. We definitely see that borne out in the transfer data and borne out eventually in the hits, as we've seen from our respondents this year, with all of the increases basically in all of the more risk-taking categories, and even more so then the cautious no longer being the majority.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like, I think it's been really fascinating to see that, as you said, the shift in behaviour. I'm always really fascinated to see how the community, this is the FPL Twitter community, of course, reacts to the situation that's in front of them, the context they have to operate in. And as you said, it's been just remarkable to see some of the big shifts, especially, you know, in terms of the more aggressive level of things. You know, I can't get over the fact that the 9 to 14 point hits season on season that has risen by almost 300%. That's just amazing, really.
Yeah, you're 50% up on the season before that as well. So it's like, you know, substantial jumps.
Amazing. I mean, 5-20 hits for the first time in 3 years. I mean, obviously we've got a limited data set. We do have over 3,000 votes, around 3,000 votes for the last couple of years, and almost 2,000 votes the first year. So it is quite a quantitatively robust sample. We're not just looking at like 200 people. So we do have kind of a range of managers here, and it's really fascinating to see, as Anthony's mentioned, and I'm just kind of echoing really, the progression from quite a cautious way of playing FPL to, as I said, with the unique circumstances this year, getting into being how we are.
Very interesting to see people sort of moving towards more aggressive strategies, whether it's caused by the circumstances specifically of this year, of course, but if it's a growing trend season by season, that's also occurring as well.
Yeah, and one thing I would actually encourage managers to do is to, if you remember responding to this poll in previous seasons, just do a quick Twitter search. You'll find the polls quite easily, and to maybe compare your own data year on year. Everyone who's responded has actually been quite consistent year on year. And last year it was very instructive to compare people between seasons, like specific managers. And I think if all of you who want to, you know, really evaluate what you're doing could do that. And I would really encourage you to do that. It's just an easy Twitter search and you'll find them all there. But that definitely brings us up to the break. It's been a really interesting conversation, guys.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. The code is CPS2LF if you want to join. And yes, there's been a few changes actually in terms of the league, a few new names that I haven't seen before. But in fifth, and everyone actually in our top 10 bar one, Captain Bamford. So sort of very samey in terms of the captain picks as well. But in fifth, it's Nicola. He got 85 points this week, the only one in the top five as well to take a minus horse, perhaps avoiding the wild card there. Great score, but sort of overall points now 1740. But a new sort of entry, I guess, to the top five is Ryan Hobbs with Hobbsy's Heroes. Got a brilliant score of 91 points again, captaining Bamford. But the highest score I can see in terms of the top 20s, that's a great score for this week. In third, it's Victor Sandberg with 78 points. But falling down to second, though, is Ben Connor with Connorman FC. But a new number one in the league is Ryan Longstaff with Wakandan Wanderers. He's been around for a little bit in the top 10, but got 90 points this week, which is another really good score for him. Just absolutely smashing it. Overall rank 94, according to the website right now. So, yeah, excellent score there. Just the usual suspects doing the business, I guess, isn't it? Dallas, 17 points, of course, huge return there. But also the double Burnley defence doing the business with Pope and Tarkowski, your friend Stag, also, and Maguire and Cancelo and Stones, of course. So clean sheets all round for him. So great score there, Ryan.
Yeah, people are really flying it there in the mini league. And I guess that rounds off that particular section and brings us on to the listeners' questions. The first of which has talking about BB, our bench boost options. And that comes from Are You Blind for Fuck's Ake? Who asks us to rattle through the bench boost options per position. And we also got a lovely limerick from Dave CZFPL, who was asking about defenders.
Yep. So obviously, we're here to talk about the big thing, which is the double game week coming up, double game week 26, as I mentioned earlier. It is the biggest double game week, I think, that we have ever seen, according to Ben Quellen, in FPL history. Linked, I guess, as well. Maybe we should just combine it and just have a big double game week blowout here at the beginning of this section. It is a question about forward planning. So FPL Dosa asks, you know, about strikers and wants to know which forward we'd highlight for the next 5 or 6 weeks. I think that'll be covered off here very nicely. FPL Tiger says, is Kane worth buying him for double game week? Again, that will kind of be covered in this question. And from the pod, FPL Elf says he was certainly getting Watkins for double game week, but is now hesitating in light of the Grealish injury. So I guess let's do some kind of wrestling to begin with, shall we? In goal, I think that if you are looking for double game weeks, both of them, I think Martinez and Areola, those are the two, aren't they? They're both in the top three for XG prevented this year. And I mean, the solidity of Aston Villa's defence is under question. I think Martinez's ability to keep goals out has been the thing which has been the difference between, you know, I'm thinking about the Brighton performance, for example, them conceding basically and not, and Arriola for Fulham as well has been putting on similar heroics, although both defences have been fairly solid throughout the course of the season. They've got okay double game weeks. So Arriola has got Crystal Palace away. Palace at the moment beat Brighton with two shots, and Brighton had about a million. So nice work, Potter. And then Arriola's also got Tottenham at home, and Spurs have famously not been that great against low block. That's what Parker does indeed employ. And similarly, Martinez has got Leeds away and Sheffield United away. But overall, of course, season, I'm finding it very difficult to look past those goalkeepers.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to challenge you at all there, to be honest, Tom. In terms of the goalkeepers, they probably seem like the best picks. I think, obviously, Nick Pope's another option out there, but he's actually got a tougher double with Spurs and Leicester anyway. And also, he costs a little bit more, 1.1 million. And it's also worth highlighting as well that Martinez and Arriola both have a game in 29. So if you wildcard and get a double game week goalkeeper in for this week, you don't have to worry about a goalkeeper in 29, which is very important as well. So I guess we'll move on to the defence. So there's a few options actually out there. We had a question about the really cheap defence that you highlighted from Dave, I think, about sort of the 4.4 million defenders. And you know, I think I actually quite like some of the Aston Villa picks out there. I think El Mahamady perhaps is a interesting one if you are looking for someone specifically under 4.4 million, just because Matty Cash is injured at the moment, so he will be filling that role, and it's a really cheap way of sort of covering the defence to a certain extent. Otherwise, of course, you've got the Manchester City picks, but I think we're all kind of, you know, talked them to death a little bit. Some of the attacking underlying stats, Cancelo is very impressive. He got 6.1, but John Stones is also a relatively decent, cheaper option, 5.1 million or 5.2 now. So we did see a little bit of rotation with the centre-backs in the last double game week, so we can't necessarily guarantee that from Pep, which is always a bit of a concern. And the other one I quite like as well, who's in my team, is Luke Shaw. So he's posting some really nice attacking stats over the past few weeks. And even though he blanked for me, he came in on my wildcard and just got the 2 points, unfortunately. He did create five chances, which was the second highest for this particular week. Only Rafinha created more chances. He created 10, massively impressive. We'll talk about him a little bit later. So I really like Luke Shaw, sort of around that 5 million mark, another relatively cheap way to cover the defence as well.
And a few other additional options, I'd probably nominate Tony Rudiger as a cheap option in there. But I guess Dave specifically was looking for a very cheap defender, and I might as well read, because he sent us a limerick, so I might as well read the limerick, which is how he posed his question. Can the pod help in my hour of need with my transfer for next week? A defender, 4.4 or under. Who's the best doubler in the league? And to that, I say Kyle Bartley, actually, to fit the parameters that he has set for us. West Brom's fixtures, I think, are quite good with that Brighton game, who we know can't score. And Everton, I think it's become a little bit vogue to think that Everton's attack is particularly brilliant. But I'm not that excited by them, having been extremely disappointed by DCL only a few short weeks ago. And so I think Kyle Bartley is quite a good option there. It's a very, very cheap defender who also has a double option. Otherwise, it's quite hard to disagree with all the options you put forward, Nick. I think that pretty much rounded them off quite nicely.
Cool. I think there may be a couple of other kind of options in there, but we are looking at kind of, marginal sorts of teams here. So over the last few weeks, for example, Fulham have been showing up in the lower half of the table in terms of SGC. They've got, as I mentioned, there's a couple of decent games in double game week. I had Ola Aina this week, who hasn't blanked in the last three game weeks, for example. He's 4.5. He got 8 points last week, so it shows that he is in the bonus if they do keep a clean sheet. As Anthony mentioned, Rudiger just looks a mainstay for Tuchel, and he's just a great option, I think, over the course of the end of the season. If he does keep that place, we don't know to what extent Tuchel is going to be keeping that team together, or at least kind of having mainstays within that team. He's notorious, which is exactly what we need as FPL managers, for rotating a lot. I think the main thing underpinning most, if not all, teams is going to be that Man City defence, and it's still the same. We've waxed lyrical about them for the last few weeks, or even longer than that. But over the last six game weeks, three big chances conceded. And so they've conceded half a big chance basically every game, which is just mental. Really, really is. I think that you're going to have to swallow a bit of rotation there. So I've got Cancelo and Diaz. I think most engaged managers are going to have two of these guys. As you mentioned as well, with Stones being rotated against his old club Everton, you are going to just find that there's no way of guessing who's going to be playing week to week. You're not going to be able to find any rhyme or reason with Guardiola. I found that this to my chagrin, you know, linking back to the previous discussion, one of my big hits this season was removing Kyle Walker for Cancelo when Walker didn't play in a midweek game. So I thought, yeah, he's nailed on to play. Cancelo did play the midweek game, and then suddenly Walker wasn't in the squad without an injury. It was just the fact that Pep fancied Cancelo to continue, and that's happened since. Moving on to midfield, I myself am running with the big four: Bruno, Salah, Son and Gundogan. I think that at the moment, okay, you know, Salah blank this week, and those people who are very triumphalist about that, and I frankly left him in, as I said last week, and for mental health reasons effectively. But I mean, I reconcile that with what I watched, which is that he was a bit peripheral to the game. So if you don't own him, I think you can probably hold on to that. However, there was one brilliant save from Pickford where Salah had a chance about 5 yards out. If he'd scored, this conversation wouldn't be happening, basically. And same with Son. I mean, he was completely peripheral with West Ham. But at one point, you know, the ball deflected off his foot, didn't it, and hit the post with Fabianski completely beaten. But I assume, as we saw in the market forces, that, you know, Harvey Barnes is going to be the one people most interested in, maybe with Maddison if he is fit alongside.
Yeah, Maddison had a little bit of a knock, which might put a few managers off. But we don't know if he'll necessarily be fit or not. But certainly Harvey Barnes, we saw in the market forces how much attention he was getting. And it's just, you know, his last few performances have been absolutely excellent. He's certainly one that I'm, you know, regretting not having in my side. I've actually got the same midfield as you, Tom, the big four, as you put it. And I think those guys are going to be key elements in most of our wild cards, and we've probably waxed lyrical about some of these assets far too much in the past, so there's not too much to say apart from, you know, they're worth the money. Son perhaps would be the one if you are thinking about going against the grain to a certain extent and targeting someone else like Barnes that perhaps would fall out of those, you know, fall out of the team, and you could perhaps even go for someone like Raheem Sterling as well as another option if you are looking for an alternative pick. I think certainly in the cheaper market, Ademola Lookman is one perhaps that's caught a few managers' eye. And I think one perhaps you're thinking of targeting yourself in terms of the sort of the double game week. You know, Fulham have a couple of okay fixtures, but Lookman's underlying stats have been pretty impressive. He's performing in the top 10 for goal attempts over the course of the season and for midfielders, and then top 10 for chances created as well. So, you know, he seems to be the sort of the Fulham talisman, so to speak, so far. Yeah, very, very cheap as well at 5 million as well. So perhaps another sort of cheap bargain around that sort of Suchet price.
Yeah, maybe just to throw in a few more names into the giant soup that we're putting together here. I think I would definitely be pro Barnes over Son, and that was something I was talking about in the different wildcard that I kind of presented in last week's episode while you guys were going through yours. I just think his stats are just particularly good, and he's a nice way to break away from what I do see as a very solidified core midfield that people are going for, but I don't feel like it's a particularly big risk given his fixtures and his current run as well. I just, you know, Tom may think he's a headless chicken, but I think his finishing has been pretty on point lately. So I would, I trust him in that regard. I do think that there's one option in there that maybe could be tossed in, and some might see this as a risk purely because of the team and the manager that he has, but Matheus Pereira at 5.4 million has been really, really good on the eye, especially if you're watching a West Brom game. Yeah. And I found myself watching all 90 minutes of West Brom versus Burnley the other day. Yeah, I genuinely
with two defenders, you had defender on both sides.
I had Sam Johnston and I had Tarkowski, and I was sitting there hoping nothing happened for the whole time. And the biggest threat to that hope was Matheus Pereira. He was everywhere. The man's electric. He's taking shots. He's on freeze. Really, I was actually really impressed. I hadn't sat down and put myself through 90 minutes of West Brom punishment in quite some time, especially in a game where they were not the whipping boys, let's say, where, you know, this was a team where West Brom were very much in it. Yeah. And it was Matheus Pereira that was very much in it. And this was a West Brom down to 10 men, remember, as well, for quite a lot of the game. And it didn't matter to Matheus, he was just there going through them. So going through that Brighton oh, those Brighton players, like, sure, yeah, like he's a low XG shooter anyway. So, you know, the fact that Brighton just don't concede much XG, see, like, doesn't matter. And then Everton, like, what is, like, Everton always concede. So I think he's a pretty decent option in there if you wanted a differential, and he could, you know, conceivably be your fifth midfielder with that price. And so I don't think he should be discounted.
I mean, we didn't mention Everton in the defence, and you know, I think
we were so right.
I think that's for a reason, isn't it? Because of that sort of they're very untrustworthy, aren't they? But they do have Southampton at home and West Brom away, which brings them the likes of, you know, my Keane, a classic Nick signing if there ever was one, and Luca Dean to the conversation in defence. In midfield, I'm not sure you would bet on James, you know, the guy we've drawn off 61 minutes who just can't sprint, can he? Let's face it, maybe it's just too cold for him, I don't know. Wow, that was such a Brexit point there. But if you move towards the attack, I think that, you know, to answer kind of that the raft of questions about the attack, Calvert-Lewin is probably the one that most people are going to be kind of homing in on, and that was obviously one of the players who was riding high in terms of the transfers in terms of the market forces. When Everton themselves are riding high too, they've drawn 11 points to Liverpool now, and having looked at the actual league table for once, he's not quite recaptured his early doors form, Calvert-Lewin, but he's still got 36% ownership, and that is already rising, and there is that attractive double to come alongside a potential double game week in game week 28 as well. So it's like one of those players that you're buying to kind of have a double in hand, as well as having a double game week coming up. And to be honest, watching them, I mean, this week with James running off Richarlison up front, yeah, okay, it did work very well against a hapless team they were playing in Liverpool. But I think when Calvert-Lewin was brought on and the kind of the whole band were back together, as we were saying a few weeks ago, I think this was the first week where I saw them all together and thought, yeah, you know what, yeah, this could go really well. Actually, no, James got taken off. Oh. So yeah, him and Richarlison as well, just working
him,
as a partnership.
Him and the lads against Liverpool's 17th choice defence. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there are no excuses, according to people who hate Liverpool on Twitter. DCL is kind of option two of the strikers. I think option one is Harry Kane. I mean, he blanked in the last game, but he passed the eye test audition, as I said on Twitter. And it really was an epic points dodge if you watched it. I mean, the stats in themselves were okay. Six shots, four in the box, only one on target. But I'd say two or three of those shots which were off target were occasions where you'd be expecting to score, or at least hit the target. And people were doing down Spurs, and obviously I love to take the piss out of Spurs. But recent poor performances have been without Kane to some extent, and also against better opposition. So over the last few game weeks, Liverpool, game week 20, Bolton, they were good. Brighton, ditto, but they used to be very, very good. So up until last week when they lost 4-1 together. That's a joke, Analytics FC. Chelsea, Man City and West Ham. And Kane was also absent for the Brighton and Chelsea games. So I think he's a player who's going to definitely be coming back to the table. Burnley at home and Fulham away. You know, Spurs do struggle against teams who do set up to defend, but there we go. But I think the third slot for strikers is where it gets interesting if you're bench boosting. Because Watkins is bossing the data at the moment, as per Alf's question. He's had the most shots in the box, the most shots on target, and the most shots over the last six. But no, Grealish absolutely hamstrung him. So he only had one shot versus Leicester. There's Vardy, who stags in the wax lyrical about, but I'm not interested. So that kind of leads me to think about a couple of differentials. One, Timo Werner. Yeah, lol. But he's got the top for XG over the last six games amongst forwards, fourth overall. Plenty have gone through the pain, and Chelsea's double game week of United and Liverpool isn't the sexiest, really. One I do have in my team at the moment, so my money is where my mouth is, on the Pereira point, is Diagne. So I included him on my wildcard because I noticed he was second for expected goal involvement amongst forwards over the last six, and he's under 1% owned. I felt it was worth including him because West Brom have to win, basically, to stay up, and he's the anointed man to bring the goals. Next three games are all at home: Brighton, Everton and West Brom, and there's also Palace away. So that's really, really nice next four, all will be slated by Allardyce to be winnable.
I like about Dian, actually, I think it's Dian, is how he seems to be capable of creating chances for himself. This wasn't something that I really captured watching highlights, but putting myself through West Brom for 90 minutes certainly showed me that he's the type of player who can run at defenders, who can really run at defenders, and can really you know, get himself into positions to have nice, decent shots without necessarily needing a huge amount of build-up play from those behind him. And that's the type of striker you need if you're in a relegation scrap. And you need someone to just kind of find that little bit of magic. And he has been posting good underlying stats. And, like, you know, everything I said about Pereira in terms of the fixtures being quite preferable definitely applied to Deanne.
Yeah, I've been looking at a few cheaper differentials as well, because I'm possibly looking for a Bamford replacement to get another double game weeker in. And one I was actually looking at as well was Josh Madger, sort of a 5.5 million punt as a replacement for Bamford. Obviously, we got a very small sample in terms of his Premier League experience, but, you know, he scored a brace on his debut, which is positive to see. He's sort of like a hero or villain, rather, from the Sons Until I Die podcast. So his team's only apt to bring the guy in. Of course, that season in League One, I had a little look at his stats. He scored 15 goals in 24 games. But of course, that was League One, even when he moved to Ligue 1 for Bordeaux. First season, 6 goals in 21 games. And then this season, he was only actually 2 goals in 17 games. So, you know, that's not kind of the best data to work with. Of course, it doesn't create the best signs, because the Premier League is a tougher league ultimately than Liga, and he struggled there. But, you know, great debut, perhaps another little differential as well for covering Fulham. I think DCL represents a really, really good option, Tom. I think it's worth highlighting just how good Everton's double game week is ultimately, West Brom and Southampton. And I did nearly have Holgate in my wildcard, actually, going back to the defence, but I decided not to, because I thought the Liverpool game, he wouldn't get a clean sheet. Of course, he did get 6 points over my pick of Rudiger in the end. So that's a mistake, perhaps. But, you know, it's worth highlighting West Brom and Southampton actually have conceded the most goals out of all teams over the last 6 game weeks. Obviously, it's a bit of an anomaly with the Southampton 9-0, but it is just an interesting stat that this could be, you know, DCL territory. And he's perhaps one of my biggest fears for the wild card in terms of players I don't own now. Otherwise, going back to sort of the questions, I guess Watkins and Kane are both in my side, and I think they're going to be key elements of my team. And again, it's that single game week in 29, not having my free hit. The fact that these guys have the double, and I think they've got quite decent fixtures, and they've got that single game week in 29, just really sorts me in terms of my longer term plan.
Linked to this, FPL Quokka asked, if Rafinha, or Rafin XA, as I christened him, is worth keeping hold of, considering the paucity of options around the price point. I think we've mentioned Lookman as being a kind of example. Maybe we can widen this to single game week as within the double game week. And maybe, Anthony, this is kind of an area where you're shy, because you've got a few of them, I guess, who are kind of in the mix here. Obviously, over the last double game week, Rafinha has been ridiculously good. If you watch him play, well, that guy's going to be at Leeds for much longer. Sorry, Leeds fans, but he's too good for that level, frankly. But 1.98 XA, 4 big chances, and far and away beyond everyone this week in terms of chances created. And just to the eye, that guy is really bloody good, as James Cross has been saying for many, many weeks. But, you know, this sort of player, I guess, is probably the epitome of the sort of player you want to be keeping, despite the fact it's double game week. So you don't want to be kind of falling into the trap of getting rid of him because of double game week, right? Says Tom, who's going to be selling him to afford DCL, probably. Anthony, what do you think about this and single game weekers in general in double game week?
Yeah, so I think with the Rafinha question, first of all, as someone who has both Rafinha and Bamford, it's actually Bamford who is going to be making way and Rafinha will stay. And part of that is, of course, because I can afford to carry him and I don't have to worry about 29, and I can just make my transfers as I go because I have the free hit available. But I think a huge part of it as well is the fact that there are quite a few double game week strikers that might be of interest to me at that low price point. Whereas that low price point midfielders, like even as we ran through midfielders, we weren't able to point to a huge number of them that you'd actually get that excited about. And so Rafinha, who is a player who could, honestly, he could score, you know, as he did this week, really, he basically did all his double game week scoring in one game. He's more than capable of matching any of the double game week players. And so I'm quite happy to keep him in my side with that in mind. But looking maybe more broadly at the double game weekers, or sorry, at the single game weekers more generally, I think, like, you know, for example, your Brighton players because they have that game in 29. I think an awful lot of managers would be probably better to try and keep them, especially Brighton defenders, just because whilst the Crystal Palace game was a hilarious anomaly, I do think that at least defensively they're quite solid. Your Leeds players in general, like, I wouldn't be rushing to sell Stuart Dallas, especially if you've got value built up in him. I think that it's not worth losing him when he has as high a ceiling as he has, and that has kind of been proven true to the highest degree, I guess you could imagine, in the double game week. But, you know, he's always had that in him, and he's always getting forward, and he's often playing in midfield, and this is something that, you know, with Dallas I've been kind of talking about for a very long time.
Yeah, so I think I'm in a similar scenario with you, where I've got a few single game weekers probably going to bench boost now. And I've got Dallas, Rafinha, Bamford and McCarthy as my single game weekers currently sitting on the bench. And certainly one of them's going to go and probably not going to take a hit. But based on Rafinha's performance, I've only owned him sort of one game week, already fallen in love with the guy. It was just amazing to watch, wasn't it? It really deserves a much larger haul. And in terms of replacements, it's Lookman or bust, I feel like, in terms of that price point. Of course, you could potentially look at Jorginho as a 4.7 million, but I'm not really interested in him either. So I think for me, that guy stays in my team, and hopefully he'll get some returns over the next few game weeks. Only costs 5.3 million. He's very, very cheap. Dallas, I've had since game week 5. Swapped him out for Luke Ayling that week, and that was one of my best decisions on the wild card. Really paid off compared to what I did with James Justin, who left on that wild card. But Dallas definitely has delivered week in, week out. And I've, as you said, Anthony, I've accrued a lot of money in this guy as well. So I certainly can't sell him, and there's no one really I'm interested in defence. So he stays. So it's between sort of McCarthy and Bamford. And I guess I could do McCarthy to Areola, but it seems like it's a lame move. And I'm actually was thinking about sort of play McCarthy next week for the Southampton double. So it's certainly one thing I'm looking at. So it might be Bamford. I haven't accrued any money in this guy, so I'm looking at sort of the Josh Madger switch there, perhaps as a little bit of an interesting alternative move there. But certainly I think, going sort of back to the question, I think, you know, there is a bit of a paucity in options, and there's certainly a case for owning single game weekers over doubles. We've seen it for Southampton, so many people sort of jumping on the Danny Ings train that could have kind of had it shoot, you know, a little bit kind of rocky, wasn't it, with only the 3 points with him over the double. And of course, you know, he likes Bruno Fernandes consistently outscoring as a single game weeker, consistently outscoring double game weekers, regardless of what you read on Twitter. So I think certainly there is a case for some of those single game week players that you mentioned, Daphne. But we'll move on to the next question, which is about triple captain thoughts. So Giorgio Proferis asked us about Kane and if he's an option for the triple captain this week, or whether the likes of Calvert-Lewin needs to be in the mix, and whether there's any other nominees as well.
Yeah, so there are definitely quite a few clear options for the triple captain if people want to go that way in this coming game week. So I think really what you're looking at are potentially City players, with them having West Ham and Wolves at home. Perhaps Bruno Fernandes, if you felt like going that way with two away fixtures, Chelsea and Crystal Palace. But I think most of all it is the Spurs guys, isn't it? With Burnley at home and Fulham away. Now, for me, I think the problem with all of these players is that with Spurs, I just fear them not performing. And so, like, do I fear them? I don't know if I would trust them enough to put the triple captaincy into one of them if I owned them. Whereas I'm quite happy to make sure, though, that I have Kane into my side just to cover me and protect me against him actually going large. I think, and I've said it earlier already, I do think he's the better pick over Son if I was looking at that particular triple captain pick. Unfortunately, the stats aren't going to be too helpful here because he's obviously been injured and something out and things. So I think what you're really looking at is just eye test more than anything, and what we saw in the last game, especially. Kane's the one that's there. He's got his penalties as well. A decent pick. Looking at the other options that you have there, you're looking at the City guys. Rotation is a fear. That's definitely part of it. West Ham haven't been bad defensively, is also another side of it, that they're not two plum fixtures, but it is really the rotation fear is the biggest thing. With players kind of coming back to fitness, you've obviously De Bruyne is back, Aguero's even back. You just don't quite know what Pep's going to do, especially when there's European games on as well. And so, like, part of me would even be tempted to suggest that, you know, don't rule out the Man City defender triple captain if you feel that one of them is going to play the two games, and, you know, just get the points, bank them, get them over with. And then there's Bruno Fernandes. Like, look, you could do it any day. So having a chance for him to do it twice, it seems like a pretty decent option to me. He's just proven so reliable over the last, 13 months that he's been in England.
Yeah, I do think there are quite a lot of decent captain options this week. So it'll be interesting to see some of the polls online, how the effective ownership ends up outlying, whether we're all going to be hiding behind the sofa, even though we are Bruno Fernandes owners, just because of that high effective ownership. And you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to maybe even triple captain this guy, or even triple captain likes of Mo Salah or Son or Gundogan or someone like that. They're all options ultimately. I think for me, I feel like Kane is perhaps the best of the options. And of course, he didn't score in his last couple of games in the Premier League. So it is worth, you know, noting that as a little bit of a risk. Burnley and Fulham, they look like great fixtures on paper. But as was noted earlier in the pod, we've seen Spurs struggle to break down these kinds of teams. And they're not in the best of form, unfortunately, as a fan. So that is a little bit of a risk. But I do feel like he was a bit unlucky in the last game, as also highlighted earlier. You know, against Manchester City, he did blank, but nobody scores against Manchester City, so that's understandable. And West Ham, he did have 6 goal attempts, 4 inside the box, and created a chance as well. So, you know, was close to adding to his 11 assists so far this campaign. And if you people fancying the TC on Kane, it might be another Mane, Sané, maybe Kane historical failure coming their way.
Another three-pointer, yeah.
But, you know, hopefully not, because he's going to be my...
It's actually worth reminding people how poorly Spurs did against both Burnley and Fulham earlier in the season, just maybe to illustrate that point a little bit more. Like, they kind of Poxley beat Burnley in game week 6, it was kind of the first disappointing performance that they had after the disappointing game week 1 performance, and it was Son that bailed them out in that particular game. And then there was a 1-1 draw with Fulham not too long ago, actually, in game week 18, which was kind of one of the first games where you could verifiably say that things had really slowed down for them and the challenge started to come off the rails.
Yeah, I think if you look at, for example, non-pen XG over the last 6 game weeks, I mean, you scroll for quite a while to get to a Spurs player. You really do. Not in the top 10, not in the top 20. Ooh, all right, get the top 50. Ooh, all right. Is there one there? Yeah, okay, there is. But I mean, for example, over the last 6 weeks, the top non-pen XG, we start to look at Bruno Fernandes and stuff. But not top non-pen is Raheem Sterling. Bamford, who's got a single game week, so maybe we wouldn't be looking at him. Mo Salah, who most of the algorithms are bringing out as being the top guy. So Mikel top fan, he's got Salah as top. FPL Review has Salah as the top option. And Fantasy Football Fix also has Salah as top option this week. In fourth, Werner. Yeah, fourth top for non-pen XG. Fifth is Watkins. Seventh is Calvert-Lewin. Okay, so all these players you're going to triple captain? Maybe. Okay, interesting. But I think what's also interesting is team XG, which is what I'm going to just rattle through here a little bit. Because top of that, over the last 4, I'm mixing things around, but I want to keep things extra sort of tight, is Manchester United. Man United have the top expected goals at the moment, 8.69 over the last 4. They also have the most shots on target, 32 over the last 4 games. Leeds, for example, the perennial shots on target guys are second with 26. Most of them have been, let's be fair, Bamford, Daisy Cuss into the goalkeeper's arms. And beyond that is Man City, 8.52, so just below United in terms of expected goals. But with Man City, as Anthony mentioned, there's obviously that rotation risk. I'm not going to go into that because that's fairly flipping obvious. And below that is Chelsea, Brighton, who don't have their game week, Leeds don't have their game week. And Fulham, I mean, are you really going to be triple captain Lookman? I take my hat off to you if you're doing that. I guess it's Bruno Fernandes, looking at the most recent numbers, because if you take into account the team performing as well as the individual performing, I guess there's an element, as Nick mentioned earlier, of that EO being so high for that particular guy. That if you are triple captaining and you're in that scenario where you want that safety of a guy who's going to perform, and we're looking at, you know, Mo Salah, the 303-point season levels going to perform, despite looking a bit crap when you watch, there's only one person, which is Bruno Fernandes. And I think there's actually, just to bring it in, segues very nicely into the end section, which is on correspondence week, Anthony, because it's all about that sort of semblance of FOMO, isn't it? And having your judgment impaired by the fact that FOMO is really important, because you watch some of those Man United games. If Bruno doesn't get any points, doesn't do anything, you'll be like, oh, actually, I'm not interested in this guy. But he's got this sort of gravitational pull towards points, doesn't he? And that brings in FOMO. And that kind of means that everybody who has ever said, oh, yeah, Bruno's not worth it, you know, he's overperforming, blah, 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 has genuflected, bent the knee, brought this guy in. And that really nicely links into what we've been asked this week, doesn't it?
Yeah, so definitely it is pertinent. And this email has come through to whogottheassist@gmail.com, where you can get your correspondence, where you can make your points on previous pods, you can put forward your theories, you can ask us questions, sing us songs about FPL, or get whatever you want in, basically. Whogottheassist@gmail.com is that email. And Mladen has emailed us in this time around. And so he goes with this. Hey guys, greetings from Croatia. And first of all, a big thank you for making my life a bit more interesting every week in these stupid COVID times. I'm an old-fashioned guy in terms of social networking. Although I have followed the FPL Twitter community for the past few years, the main reason is that I love FPL and I love to talk and listen about it. From the moment I started playing in 2016, 2017, I was more of an eye test guy. In fact, in 2018-19, when I didn't know what XGC or even FOMO were, I surely hadn't heard of Ben Crillon or you guys, I finished 6,623rd place, just watching a lot of football and making my own decisions. I'm not saying that the FPL community didn't improve my game and reasoning, on the contrary, actually, but I encountered a small problem. I became torn between my stubbornness and subjective eye test on one side, and FOMO, usually connected with high ownership of top players that I was missing, on the other. Then Mladen goes on to explain how he, this is by an email, by the way, in December, and thanks for waiting, Mladen, this long before we got to it, that Mladen in December planned to go most of this season without Kane and Son because he just didn't like Mourinho's style of play, and regardless of Spurs' fixtures and even though their ownership could be scary. So with that in mind, Mladen asks us what we should do in these types of situations, in a standard situation where we're not chasing and where we're not defending a position. Should we continue to play our own game and potentially shoot ourselves in the foot by not covering with at least one of them, or should we just go with the tide and pick those players just because we need to? Cheers, Mladen. So, guys, basically what this breaks down to is, you know, it's a very pertinent question on this week about, you know, what should we be thinking about doing with the out-of-sorts Spurs players that are coming into sides because they're so highly effectively, they have a huge EO. And when it comes to the likes of Bruno Fernandes, especially, I think more importantly than ever, when he has an EO north of 100 every single week. So even if you own him, you're actually relatively losing rank even when he does well because so many people have captained him if you don't captain him.
Yeah, I think we saw this over Project Restart, for example, where Bruno Fernandes has an average EO of 120% every week, which is just ridiculous, frankly. So it means that effective points, and go back to a pod a few weeks ago if you want to find out about this, the effective points against you, if you didn't captain him, were positive. So it meant that even if you own him, he's still going to score points against your overall score. That's just crazy. And he's now back at the point, as Anthony mentioned, where every week he's going to have 100% plus effective ownership. So to me, that leaves three options. And obviously quite obvious options, of course. The first one is to captain a player, you know, in all but the toughest games. Two is own, and it's a small red if you don't captain them. And three is don't own or sell. So you get big peaks if he blanks and big troughs if he shit houses, which he's going to do because he's Bruno Fernandes. And in terms of, you know, this the question Mladen asks is a really, really good one. Often, really, when it comes to ownership, you have to kind of decide which bandwagon is going to be one which is worth backing and which bandwagon is going to be one which is just a bit of a red herring. A lot of the time, ownership does corral towards a certain player for a reason, and that can be because they're scoring points. It can be because they look, you know, if they look bad when you're watching them, but they're getting end product, it doesn't matter that they look bad. It matters that they get the end product. That's the difference between football, where a player can be a bad footballer but can get end product, with FPL, which is that we don't really care about how good they are as a footballer. We care about them getting the end product. Think about, you know, a player like John Lundstrom, for example. Because he was so cheap, it didn't matter that he wasn't the best footballer in the world. He happened to be out of position, have to be getting points. And, you know, those weren't, you know, Danny Ings style wrapped finishes with low XG from the edge of the area into the top corner. Those, you know, tap-ins or whatever like that. At the end of the day, I think there is always kind of that element of FOMO. We shouldn't just kind of dismiss it as being, oh, you know, that's heard, blah, blah, blah. A lot of the time that exists for a reason, which is because that player is definitely, you know, a player who's going to hurt you in terms of fantasy football. Maybe that's me being kind of, you know, having a sense of fear about what I do because of, over the course of a few years, I've sold players, you know, like Mo Salah, who have then come back to haunt me, or last few games, which I mentioned, I've had, there's been high EO players who have hurt me. But I think that, like, there's always a case for playing your own game. And of course, if you do that, you know, you're not going to be hurt by anything, because you're like, you can always say, oh, I play my own game, I just kept my convictions and et cetera, et cetera. That completely makes sense. But I do think there's an option, or at least there should be a consideration given to the fact that the herd can lead you astray at times. I think it's down to your judgment to kind of think, okay, this is a bit rubbish. I shouldn't be, you know, buying in Danny Ings for his double game week because he's got an injury record. They've been a bit rubbish over the last 8 or 9 game weeks. And it's just the case that they've got double game week. That's why I'm looking at buying, the same with the likes of Jannik Vestergaard. I think it really is something that should be kind of considered, frankly. And I really wish, as I said on the pod last week, and I've also said on Twitter numerous times, I really wish I didn't know what EO was. But it's something that needs to be respected. And, you know, maybe going back to the conversation a second ago about captains, he should be the player that should be looking at the captain each week, just because at the end of the day, you can forget about captaincy. It's not going to affect you too much. You can kind of gain elsewhere in your team.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Madden. I think you've raised a number of pertinent points there in terms of Bruno. But sort of going back to Son, I guess, and the question there about, you know, the herd, when you mentioned there the herd's leading you astray, certainly with Son and Kane, perhaps the herd would have led you astray, because if you'd avoided them sort of over the last 8 game weeks or so, Son's actually only got 1 goal, 1 assist. So if you could ignore Son and Kane, it would certainly have been to your benefit over the past 8 game weeks and gone for some of those other alternative picks. So I think certainly there is a case sometimes of effective ownership that, you know, it does have a little bit of a negative impact on our games, because it does take a little bit of the joy, unfortunately, and it just creates a bit more of a fear factor, even over players you actually own on your side. But certainly, you know, it doesn't always mean that these are the right players to get, and you have to essentially make your own judgment with your own side and see what suits your team best. And obviously, with the case of Spurs, unfortunately, as a fan, the wheels have fallen off to a certain extent over the last 8-9 weeks. And with assets like Son and Kane, hopefully they'll switch it around, because it's double game week. I own both of them for this double game week. But you know, you'd have been better off not owning them over the past 8 or 9 weeks and owning other players, as opposed to owning them. And you'd have been ahead of the template in that respect as well. But of course, in the inverse, you know, sometimes when you ignore the players in the template, you can get heavily punished. And I've taken a few risks recently with like Wilkie Gundogan, who was in everyone's side. Unfortunately, I went for other players at Manchester City, and it really, really damaged my rank, just because when that guy got 80 points last week, that was a ginormous red arrow for me. So that represents the risk of when you try and be contrarian, try and go for something a little bit different to what everyone else is doing, and try and pick those differentials. It can have massive upside, but it can also have massive downside. It kind of links a little bit, I guess, in terms of the risk profiling we did earlier. If you're a gambler, if you're a high risk taker, then go for those differentials, those alternative picks. If you want to play it safe and easy, then, you know, captain Bruno each week, and then just kind of let your team do its business.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. I think it definitely links to the risk profiles more generally. And it was interesting the way Mladen asked the question, kind of looking for how we should consider these situations just from a standard position. But I guess that's nearly where it's almost impossible, because you will always be chasing, or you will be defending, and you will always be someone who might be more risk prone or risk averse. And so with that in mind, I guess you are always playing your own game, and sometimes that game may correlate with that of the herd, and that's a decision that you make. But at the end of the day, you should take the decision that you think is going to get your team the most points and decide that way. That would be my recommendation anyway, Mladen. But thanks so much anyway, Mladen, for sending in that email. Really appreciated it. He sent it in December, so it took a while to get around to it with all the short game weeks that we had, but we get there eventually. So he sent that to whogottheassist@gmail.com with any of your thoughts, poems, addendums to previous pods, absolutely anything, guys. It's a very versatile slot, and we'll get to it at some point. So thanks so much.
Yeah, it's one of the pitfalls of launching a new segment in as crazy a season as we've seen. But yeah, I'm glad to see that it's still functioning at this point in the season. Yeah.
Absolutely. Flying, Tomid. Functioning. Gee.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. We're not dredging December records or anything. Right, okay, let's move on to transfers and captains then this week. So I think that we've probably given a decent enough indication of where we're going. But in terms of transfers and captains, let's go with you first, Anthony. What's on your mind about here?
So Bamford's going, and Harry Kane is going to come in. That's obviously a pretty big, steep jump. So I need to find only 0.7 because I had so much in the bank to make that work. And it is going to be the hero of the last 2 weeks, James Tarkowski, I think, who will make way to fund that. So he's obviously 5.3. So that, just the way the values and stuff work out, that allows me 4.7 to spend on my next defender. Who will that be? I haven't decided yet, but of course I don't need to pick a player that plays in 29 because I have my free hit. So that gives me a little bit more space. I think I'll probably go for a double game week player just because that would be, you know, nice to be getting some of those points and protect myself more than anything against others. And so it could be Ola Aina, for example, that comes into my side. I'm not 100% sure though. The captaincy right now with Kane coming into my side, I think, is going to be on him. But that's very protective of me, and I may just end up going with Bruno Fernandes. I thought it was quite interesting, though, to see that Chelsea managed to lock out Atletico Madrid so comprehensively in the Champions League. Atleti they've dipped off in form a little bit in La Liga, but they've obviously been top of the league and doing quite well. And it was interesting to see Chelsea doing more than fine in that environment in Bucharest. And it just kind of makes me definitely pause for thought that little bit more. But that Palace game, Fernandes could go particularly well as well. You're always just talking about penalties anyway being a potential factor. I'd say more likely than not it'll be Kane.
Okay, no, I think I'm between Kane and Bruno for my captain. I just don't know. With Bruno, it kind of, as I was saying earlier, the EO is so high now that if you do get into that situation where you can captain him, it kind of feels like you probably should, just because you can get rid of the worry about captain every week and then go on from there. But, you know, the other side of it is what we saw this week. So if you captain Rafinha above captaining Bamford, then you made a gain. So maybe it is the case that captaining Kane is a good idea. It's just that I look at, you know, Burnley, look at Fulham, and look at what I've watched from Spurs over the last few weeks and just think, how are Spurs going to do against those two teams? Really? I'm a bit worried about that. I'm not sure whether that is worth captaining a player for those two. So it might be that I give it to Bruno Fernandes, and it might be that I trust in their high XG, and it might be that I trust in his high ownership. I'm not sure yet either. One thing's for sure is that the captaincy and vice captaincy is swapping over between those two. In terms of the transfers this week, I'm probably going to have to make a decision tonight, so by the time you hear this, because I've got perfect money to move Bamford and Rafinha to Calvert-Lewin and, yeah, a 4.3, which is Smith Rowe. And I'm probably going to do it just because I'm going to end up with 14 double game winkers plus Smith Rowe. And the fact is that Bamford and also Rafinha are buyable again, whereas someone like Calvert-Lewin perhaps isn't buyable again. Kane definitely isn't buyable again. And I'm going to rely on the fact that the beauty of a Leeds team being so cost effective is going to help me out when it comes to game week 29 and I don't have a free hit. So I'm likely to do that, which means I'll have 14 double game weekers plus Smith Rowe, who I'll be hoping for 1 point from. Nick, what about you?
Yeah, so I've actually got the armband on Harry Kane. I'm pretty set and certain that he's going to be my captain this week. I think he's just got the best fixtures of them all. I know we mentioned that Spurs struggled against Burnley and Fulham last early on in the season, but he actually picked up 13 points in total over those two games, a goal and assist, which is worth highlighting. A pretty decent return, I think, for a double gaming captain, perhaps. Contrast Bruno, only got 5 points against Crystal Palace and Chelsea in the inverse fixtures. And if that comment helps reduce his effective ownership for next week, then that's perfect, because I'm a little bit scared about him. So please, Captain Kane, enjoy me. In terms of my transfers, it's probably going to be Bamford and Josh, Bamford leaving, and perhaps Josh Maguire, just a bit of a weird differential pick. So, yeah, fancying that perhaps as my moves. So, cool. Thanks so much for listening. We, of course, Who Got the Assist? Don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll see you next Thursday, which is after this Double Game Week 26. If you want to get any correspondence in the meantime, it's whogottheassist@gmail.com is the email.
Yep, we'll see you then. All the best in the double. We hope to assist you. We think about risk profiles and how that may overall impact you as an FPL manager. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.